Will you all do me a favor and stand up just for a minute, please? Turn to somebody right next to you and say, hi. Okay, you can have a seat. Sit down. Hey, who said it? I've just had you sitting so much today, I just thought it would be good to get a little stretch there. If you have your Bibles, if you open them up to 2 Corinthians, just got a short study that I want to share with you. We're going to continue in our study in 2 Corinthians. We've been carrying through a thought here, and so I want to continue with this thought that Paul has had that we started last week. Have you ever been homesick? You know what that's like? You know, you're away from home, you're somewhere, maybe you don't like the present surroundings that you're in, and you just long to be home. Have you ever felt like that? Looking around at the present situation and thinking, oh, I just got to get home somehow. I am not what you would call a great traveler. I'm just not. Some people are content to live out of suitcases and travel around a lot, go around the globe, and that's cool. I mean, you know, different personalities, different ways in which people respond to things. I'm just not one of those kind of people. I don't do well. My first question usually whenever I'm going to go somewhere, my first question is, when do I get home? Because I like being home. That's just, ever since I was a little kid, when I was a kid, whenever we'd go somewhere as a family, I used to constantly want to be able to get home. And my mom even came up with a little song that she'd sing. When we got on the road that was our road that our house was on, she'd start singing this little ditty about, you know, we're on a home road, Rob and John, which is my name. But anyway, don't tell anybody. And you know, it always comforted me. I'd hear that song. As soon as I hear that song, I'd just finally, you know, you kind of relax a little bit. Oh, good, we're going to be home soon. That's a wonderful feeling. This morning, as we continue our study in 2 Corinthians, Paul's going to sort of do the same thing. He's going to be bringing us comfort by reminding us that we're on the home road, child of God. We're on our way home to God. So if you've opened your Bibles, did I tell you to do that? Open your Bible if you have it to 2 Corinthians chapter 5. I don't think I told you to do that. I did? See? I got things together more than I realized. Okay, cool. 2 Corinthians chapter 5. Last week in chapter 4, Paul was encouraging us to keep our eyes on eternity. Remember that? How he was telling us that we can navigate through the difficulties of this present life by looking at the kingdom that's coming, by keeping our eyes fixed on the goal that's before us, those unseen things. He says we look at unseen things and gauge our understanding of who we are and where we are by those, not the things that are seen. So here in chapter 5, he's going to continue on. He's still on that subject as we get here. And in fact, the first 10 verses are still part of the same thought of chapter 4. You have to remember the chapters and the verses, those didn't get inserted into the text till about 1,000 years after Paul wrote this stuff. So sometimes, you know, maybe they should have changed those headings there a little bit. But either way, it doesn't matter. If you're there in chapter 5, let's begin. We'll start in verse 1. He says, for we know that if our earthly house, this tent, is destroyed, we have a building from God. We have a building from God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. Now, in the last chapter, Paul was describing this amazing thing that's happening with Christians, where, remember how the second law of thermodynamics, entropy, is at work in our outward man. Everything is grinding down. Everything is winding down. And if we keep our eyes fixed on the stuff of this life while it's just sifting through our fingers as we look at it. But at the same time, for a Christian, the opposite is true with our inward man. He says our inward man continuously, day by day, gets stronger, gets better put together, gets more holy, becomes more cleansed and strengthened day by day. It's a wonderful thing. So Paul kind of tells us what happens when these two opposite forces actually come to their conclusion. As the outer man perishes away, that inward man, which day by day is getting renewed, it reaches its goal. We realize that there's more beyond this life, more to this life than just what we know right here. In fact, what we learn from what Paul says right here, we learn that this present reality is not our home. this present reality, and those are things that we need to, as Christians, remind ourselves of every so often. This present reality that we live in right now, this material world that we dwell in, this is not our home. Paul uses very interesting language in this passage in making an analogy about our life here and after this life is over. He compares our existence here, if we go on to verse 2, he says, "For in this we groan, earnestly desiring to be clothed with our habitation which is from heaven. If indeed, having been clothed, we shall not be found naked. For we who are in this tent groan, being burdened, not because we want to be unclothed, but further clothed, that mortality may be swallowed up in life." I just made a huge mistake there jumping to that text. I don't know where I'm at. My head's all over the place. So just forget what I just said right there. What I want to talk about is how we have our lives here compared to living in a tent. He uses this language here. He talks about when this life is over. He says this life is basically a tent. We're moving on towards something that is a permanent structure. And the word that he uses there, back in verse 1, I feel terrible that I made you jump over there. I don't know where my head went just for a moment, but I'm back with you now, okay? Is that cool? And we'll all just work through this together. But in verse 1, he talks about that we are in this tent, and he uses that language. It talks about a tent, like a mobile structure like that, but then the words that he uses about this home that's not built with hands, but it's an eternal structure, the word that he uses there connotes like a home, a house, a permanent structure, a family dwelling, is what he's basically saying. And of course, in this, this is a temporary place to crash, this world, this life that we live in. The other is a permanent kind of structure. Now, if we think about it, how many of us here this morning would rather live just in a tent than in a permanent house? If you were thinking about the house that you live in right now, would you rather trade that up for a tent somewhere, like a nice little canvas pup tent that you could put up somewhere out in the woods? No, none of us would want to do that. There's no comparison. A tent is just for quick excursions. It's a camp out. It's a house that is a temporary in its nature. But a house that's a permanent structure, man, that's a place where you put down roots. That's a place where you establish something and you build a home out of that. Our lives here are supposed to be seen in that same light. This is a camp out. That's what Paul's basically trying to say. What we're experiencing right here, right now, this is a camp out. That's what it is. It's a temporary journey that ends when we step into eternity with God. And now, I realize none of us have never known, we've never known any other kind of existence but the existence that we have here in this material plane. This is the only reality we've ever known, this material world that we've grown up in. Paul had a special revelation that he received from God that he intimates about in other letters, revelations that gave him a special confidence about what he's writing about. He could say, "We know that it will be this way, and this is how it is." For the rest of us, we're like Lynn with that paper this morning. We had to take this by faith. We had to have confidence that this word is true, and this is by his design. But through his word, we can know that there's a good ending coming to this story of our lives, this story that we're walking through right now. This life is a journey, the end of it, the end of which journey brings us home. Brings us home into his presence like that. And the way Paul words this, it's so important. Because when it's translated there, if our tent is destroyed, it would have been better translated as dismantled. Like you would take down a tent. You look at the way the tent is put up. It's put up with different poles and different things that keep it upright. But when it's time to break camp, you start taking down the various poles and pulling up the strings and all that. That's what the word is that he's talking about, taking down the tent when it's time to move on. And when the tent's been dismantled and folded up and packed away, Paul's saying that we have something better to look forward to, something beyond this life, a home, not a tent, a building, not just a temporary shelter there. It's all metaphor that Paul's using here, but he's trying to contrast the here and now that we live in and explain to us that this is not our home. Our home is somewhere else, that realm of the unseen that Paul was talking about in the last chapter. It's a good metaphor because it doesn't denigrate our present reality. It doesn't run that down and try to say, well, this present reality is no good then. I want to get out of here. I want to die. No, not at all. It's a good camp out. I mean, in reality, I mean, camp outs can be enjoyable, can't they? Kind of. I mean, Campouts are. I like camping out now and then. But ultimately, on a long, you know, over a long haul, campouts get kind of uncomfortable if you think about it. I mean, camping out is fun, but after a while, you get tired of, you know, rolling over into the dew-soaked canvas in the morning and getting that wet all across your face. And you get up and you wander outside, and everything you eat tastes like smoke from a wood fire, even the Cap'n Crunch, you know, that you're eating in the morning. You just get tired of that. And after a while, you just want to be home. You want to be in a comfortable bed somewhere where you can just snuggle up. You want dry socks and hot showers and a bowl of popcorn and Turner Classic Movies, stuff like that. You don't want to be out in the woods anymore. At least now you know how I am to be with at a camp out, but camping out has its place. It's an enjoyable thing, but it's not home. And while there are very few details that Paul gives us about our real home, and really overall in the Bible, there are very few details about what that's going to be like. There's a lot of mystery that we have to take by faith when it comes to that. Paul does give us an indication of why it's good there at the end of verse 1. Where he tells us that this home is not man-made. It's not made by hands. It's God-made just for us. And what a wonderful thought that is. And we realize that our true home is made just for us by God. What a wonderful thought that is. You know, we realize this is a camp out. This is something we're moving through. We're on our journey through. But this is what we're heading towards, a home, a dwelling, a plane of existence that's been devised for us just by God, for us. There's this show that Robbie and Janelle watch on TV, and they try to get me to watch it. I don't like watching it with them. I just can't do it because I call it the crying show. I just sit there and I look like Riley after a while, and I admit it. I cry like a little girl when I'm trying to watch this show. It's just pathetic. It's called Extreme Makeover Home Edition. I don't know if you've ever seen it. Anybody ever seen that show? Wow, everybody's clapping for it. Okay. They love it. I like it, but I can't, you know, like I said, I get embarrassed after a while watching it. It's this show where this team of designers, they go in and builders, and they find a family who's in need and who's, you know, really suffering from problems within their home, and they basically go in and just rebuild the whole home for them. They just tear down the old structure, and they replace it with a new structure designed explicitly for them, for all of the specific needs that they have. But my problem is, and I'll tell you honestly what happened to me, is one time I was watching this show, and it was interesting enough, but the hosts there, where they were revealing all the wonderful aspects, it was this family, and they had a special needs person in their family with them, and all of a sudden they're walking through this place, and the host is leading them through, and he's all excited about saying, and remember how you had to go through this over here, and it was so difficult to get up these steps? Well, look what we've done for you. And then there's these ramps, and it's this beautiful stuff, and the person, you know, is just breaking down in tears. And of course, I'm over there. And the host, I was looking at the host, and he was so excited, and he was so thrilled to be showing them all these different things that they'd been able to do, especially for them. And I swear to you, deep down in my heart, I really believe I heard Jesus say to me that I'm looking forward to that day when I'll be delighted to show you all that I've prepared, especially for you. You know, all I can do is cry now when I watch that show because I can't disassociate it with what I thought for sure I heard. Imagine that. Jesus putting together a dwelling that was designed specifically for us. Does that sound too man-centric? I don't believe so. And the reason I don't believe so is because we were made for that. We were made to be in his presence. That's why we're here in the first place. The only reason we exist, the only reason we have the breath of life, is so that we could be connected with him in a realm, in a place, in a way in which we interact with him and worship him and love him and receive from him and honor him. And so it only makes sense that for those of us who've received this offer of salvation, he's working on a dwelling place for us. Something, I mean, you talk about an extreme home makeover. That's what I'm looking for. One day, all of God's people are going to leave the suffering of this life, of this tent, of this rundown, ramshackle thing that we've been knowing as an existence. Those of you here that I know are struggling with things, that are dealing with things that are so difficult, one day we're going to leave this plane, and it will be the King's delight to be able to show all that he's done and prepared. My brothers and sisters all over the world who suffer persecution to know that one day the oppression that they've known here and the struggle that they've known here are going to be gone away. The outcasts and the persecuted are going to be ushered into the presence of a king, and it's going to be the delight of the king to show around this home that he's made for us, just for us. Man, it's like my old man said, that'll be the day. That'll be the day when we get there. And he says to us, come, blessed of my Father. That in itself is a reason to be homesick, to not put down roots here, to recognize and realize this is a passing thing. Well, let's go on here, verse 2. Well, I read to you verse 2, but I'm going to reread it because I was out of my mind for a moment. But like I said, I'm back. Verse 2, for in this we groan, earnestly desiring to be clothed with our habitation, which is from heaven. If indeed, having been clothed, we shall not be found naked, for we who are in this tent groan, being burdened, not because we want to be unclothed, but further clothed, that mortality may be swallowed up by life. Now, he who prepared us for this very thing is God, who also has given us the Spirit as a guarantee. So we're always confident, knowing that while we're at home in the body, we're absent from the Lord. For we walk by faith, not by sight. We are confident, yes, well pleased, rather, to be absent from the body and present with the Lord. In other words, he's not afraid of death. It's not that he's ready to go out there and throw away his life, but he's not afraid of it at all because it just means one step closer to his goal. And he dismisses the idea. You know what he's talking about here? He's dismissing the idea that we're just spirits trapped in a body. That's sort of a Gnostic kind of an idea. And it permeates a lot of even Christian theology, I notice, that the idea that, you know, we're just these spirits trapped in a body and one day we'll be released. That's not what Paul says at all. He changes the metaphor to clothing, indicating that our desire to live is a desire to be clothed. We want to be clothed. We know that our existence here in this body is important. That's what makes up who we are. We're, a human person is body, soul, and spirit united together, functioning that way. We don't want to be naked. We don't want to be separated from that, separated from our flesh. But he assures us that we won't be. God has a different kind of existence for us. We won't be naked, but verse 4 is basically saying we're going to be super clothed, you know, further clothed. The words mean basically we're going to be super clothed, extra clothed. We're going to take on something different, eternal skin that's not going to fade away. Now, he's making that point, and as he's making that point, there's actually a larger point behind all the words that he's saying there, and I want to look at that just a little bit. Consider what he's talking about, because he talks about groaning. You know, the language that he uses here, we're groaning, we're waiting, earnestly desiring this life to come, this existence, this plane of living that isn't part of this natural world as we understand it, this fallen plane of existence, but is there with God. And the words there, those are emphatic words that he's using out of the Greek. We groan. We earnestly desire that. And we see from this that it's better to be homesick for heaven than to homestead here in this fallen world. Paul makes no apologies for desiring heaven. I think that's very interesting, this eternal realm of God's kingdom. He makes no apologies for saying that I groan for this, I long for that. And I'll tell you, I think it's something that we need to recapture in our lives as Christians, especially as 21st century American Christians, because there's almost this sense of condescension when we talk about heaven. Sometimes you get the feeling, it's not necessarily stated that way, but in some ways in which this is presented that I've heard it before, it's almost kind of like rolling the eyes, like, yeah, okay, you know, that's part of our doctrines. We believe in hell of heaven, but it kind of makes us look silly, so we don't want to talk about it very much. But Paul was not afraid to emphasize his desire for heaven. He says he groans for it. He's waiting for the mortality of this existence, and I love the wording there, to be swallowed up by life. Remember, Paul is constantly positive on all of these things. Remember, he refers to death as sleep. He never just says, oh yeah, they died. He doesn't use the language of finality. Oh yeah, so-and-so died. No, he says they're sleeping. He's looking for something else to be taking place here. He never allows this to be a sense of finality in a negative sense. He talks about he's waiting for mortality to be swallowed up in life. In other words, when he passes from this plane of existence, it's not the end of everything, and it's not over, and it's not a sad and horrifying event. No, life has just happened there, even though from our perspective, it looks like death. And he makes no apologies for that. And I love that. He's not afraid to emphasize his desire for heaven. He's groaning for it. And he says in verse 5 that God's prepared our hearts for this very thing. The one who's prepared our hearts for this is God. And the Holy Spirit who indwells us is the deposit of what's to come. I want to read to you what the message paraphrases this as. It says, the Spirit of God whets our appetite by giving us a taste of what's ahead. He puts a little of heaven in our heart so that we'll never settle for less. Oh, what a great way to paraphrase that. A little of heaven in our hearts so we never settle for less. And the problem is, I believe on a daily basis, we are faced with the temptation to settle for less. When we look at all of the things that we face in terms of temptations in this life, in terms of attitudinal choices, all of these things are temptations to settle for less than this, to view this life as though that were all there is, as though that's the end of it all, as though this fallen world is home. We fall into this pattern as Christians, and we of all people on earth should not be living like this, but we fall into patterns of just existing. Well, I'm just going to get through. I'm just going to make it through somehow. I'll just keep going to work and struggle through that and just do my best to carve out a little bit of happiness here because this is all there is. Instead of setting our sights forward, outward, remembering where home really is, and it's not here. There's a movie. In the movie Lemony Snicket's A Series of Unfortunate Events. Anybody see this? It's kind of a kid's movie. Anybody see that movie? Not too many of you. You don't like kid's movies. Okay. The movie is taken from a children's book by the same title. And it's a story about these three intelligent and wealthy children who were orphaned when their house caught fire. So they're children from a fallen house. And they're heirs to a fortune that will only be theirs when the oldest daughter comes of age. So they're sent to live with their distant relative, the greedy Count Olaf, who plans to destroy them and steal their inheritance. And if you're not catching on at all, this is the gospel story. Whether the writer intended that or not, it's encoded in our hearts. It comes out everywhere. And that's what's happening in this. So there's this scene where the children are suddenly confronted with the reality of the terrible situation they're in. They're away from their home. They're made to serve and serve every little whim and desire of this greedy Count Olaf who's pressing his oppression over them. And I want you to just take a look real quick at this one quick little scene here.
It's time you children learned a little respect.
Put her down!
You all saw it. The boy slipped.
You won't get a cent until Violet turns 18.
Oh, really? Says who?
The law. Look it up.
We're going to call Mr. Poe about this right now.
Ooh. 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 Are you?
I'm very disappointed in you children.
Are you okay?
No.
Klaus, what are you doing?
I'm going.
Going where?
Home.
This is our home now.
This is not home. Home is where your parents put you to bed at night. Where they teach you to ride a bike. Or where they get all choked up on your first day of school. This is not home.
Every one of us is faced with that temptation to give up like Violet did, to begin to look at life. Those children go off now from that point in the movie onto an adventure of finding their true home. It's a very interesting story. But we're often faced with this temptation to just kind of give up. Just like Violet saying, this is our home now. Those dark circumstances, the terrible situation that we're in, this is it. I'll just have to try to make out the best that I can. We sigh in resignation and we just say that's it. Find a little bit of happiness here. When what we really need to do is be like Klaus, or rather be like Paul, and realize that this is not home. Remind ourselves, remind each other, this is not home. This never will be. God put a little bit of heaven into our hearts so that we'll never settle for less, so that we'll never settle for what this is here. And when we look around us, Dustin shared with us this morning, this war raging in Uganda, but you didn't even have to go that far. We look around us and we see the devastation of this world. We see how this world works. We see the way addictions work in lives. We see the war and the disease and all of the plagues that move in on us and tear us down. We see how even in our own lives, if we were looking at this life alone to try to find some happiness, how fleeting, how elusive it really is. Sometimes you can take a step forward and four steps backwards in any kind of attempt to find some measure of happiness out of the circumstances of this life. We know that it shouldn't be like this. We may not know exactly what it's supposed to be like. We may not know exactly the details of what home should be like, but intuitively we know it. This can't be home. This is not home. Home can't be like this. It's better to live homesick for heaven than to homestead here in this fallen place and start adopting an attitude that assumes this is all there is. That this is all there is to life. Well, let's move on here. Verse 9. Therefore, we make it our aim, whether present or absent, to be well-pleasing to him. For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, that each one of us may receive the things done in the body according to what he has done, whether good or bad. Knowing therefore the terror of the Lord, we persuade men, but we are well known to God, and I also trust are well known in your consciences. Well, here's the thing. In Ecclesiastes, the teacher there goes over all the futilities of life. It can kind of be a negative kind of a book. He goes over how, you know, all of the pursuits of this life and the things, and, you know, this is, most people assume that the teacher there is Solomon, and he's a guy that had everything, if it's him that wrote it. He had everything handed to him. He had so much stuff, and yet it was all futile to him. He says, you know, you can work all day, and you pass on whatever you've gathered up to those who are going to survive you when you die. And when he gets to the whole thing, he concludes the whole book by saying, here's the sum of the matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, because we're all going to face him in the end. That's a Woodrum paraphrase, but that's basically what he says there. And here's the thing that we need to keep in mind as we journey through this present reality of life, is that when this is all finished, when this life is finished, we will see God, whether good or bad. Something to keep in mind. Paul says that's why we aim to please God, because he's the one we're going to face when it's all over with. Paul says we must all appear before Christ at his judgment seat. Literally, that word is bema. It's a raised step from which Olympic contestants received their awards for the race that they would run, or the competition that they were in. Now, we don't equate this passage here with the great white throne judgment of Revelation 20. This is for believers, as best we can tell, and the idea is similar to what Paul said back in 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 12, where the motive and the source of our life choices and actions are going to be revealed and either rewarded or burned away as acts and works of the flesh. But it's not about salvation. He's talking about awards being handed out like at the end of an Olympic competition. So we dismiss the idea of it being about salvation. But then he does seem to enlarge it by the time he gets to verse 11. Enlarge the idea that it indicates that everyone's going to be standing before God at some point. And for those who rejected his offer of salvation, it's a terrifying proposal. For those who rejected this, who didn't receive him, who walked away from him, they're going to face him too. And that's a very terrifying thing if they hadn't received his salvation. And the fear of what that will mean to some is what Paul says is his motivation to continue on in the face of opposition and everything else, to continue on sharing this good news about who Jesus is. Just like Jerry shared with us this morning, we want to continue on. We want to be ready to give an answer. We want to be used by the Lord in whatever capacity we can be to share this good news of who Jesus is, because this life is coming to an end, no matter what. No matter how we may kind of shuffle around our priorities and forget that fact, this life will be concluded at some point, and we will face him. We don't want to homestead here and make all of our life decisions based on this life alone, as though this were all there is. As though gaining as much wealth or amassing as many products that they want to sell to us are the important things. The axiom, he who dies with the most toys wins, is a lie. And we've got to reject that lie, because in reality, it's the other way around, more than likely. He that dies with the most toys is going to have to give an answer for those toys. Why do you have so many toys when there was another life coming? Why do you have so many things when your brothers and sisters had nothing? We're going to have to answer for those kinds of things. And when we stand before him, we're going to do it by ourselves. When we leave this life, we are going to step away from all of our friends and all of the parties and be faced with him, face to face. And that's either going to be something that we'll be really stoked about, because that's where we've been headed in all of our life choices all along, or we're going to have a lot of splaining to do. Well, Lord, you know, I was pretty busy with work. I didn't have a whole lot of time to think about you. I had a job to do. My kids took all my time, Lord. That was your fault, right? I didn't have any time to mess with thinking about things about God. I certainly had no time to share anything about you with anybody. I was just trying to find some happiness in this life, Lord. I had no time to think about spiritual things. They weren't tangible enough for me. It's a good thing to remind ourselves on a regular basis that one day we will step away from this plane and we will stand before him for good or for bad. It's stuff to contemplate and remember and base and evaluate our life choices in light of that reality. Because one day our life choices and our decisions will be weighed. They'll be weighed out. And how will the scales tip in our lives? What will be the final reading on that scale? Have we settled here in this life and made this our home? Or have we seen this as a tent? This was a camp out, man. I'm on my way home. I had to face the dewy canvas in the morning and the smell of wood fire every day, but one day I will be home. And that's what I'm looking forward to. That's what I'm going to choose based on. It will make a difference. We may not see it right now. We may not be able to tangibly see that right now, but it will make a difference in our lives if we set our hearts on things to come instead of settling here. So let's take this to heart. It's an encouragement and it's a challenge as well. It's an encouragement to know that something better is coming. There's a good ending coming to the story, no matter what. But it's a challenge, too, because we live in a country where, oh, man, we know opulence like no other nation in the world right now. And the temptation to settle here, to lay back on soft cushions here and now and say, this is it, this is life, this is all I want, is a very grave temptation indeed, and one that we have to take to heart and allow the Lord to lead us differently, right? Cool. Very cool. Well, if you'll stand with me, we'll close with a song. Then I got a prayer request that I'd like us to...